This is UN and Africa from the United Nations in New York. I'm Matt Wells. In this week's programme, Burundi violence likely constitutes crimes against humanity, the Human Rights Council hears. And we'll talk to the Nigerian school founder, who's this year's winner of a major award from the UN Refugee Agency. But first, displaced people in Africa's volatile Lake Chad region have an urgent request to the international community. We need your protection. That's the message the new UN Emergency Relief Coordinator, Mark Lowcock, is delivering to world leaders meeting in New York at the latest session of the General Assembly. It's the first time Mr. Lowcock's participating in the annual gathering of the UN's 193 member states, having just taken the helm of the UN Humanitarian Affairs Office, OCHA, this month. Alexandra Yudolian asked him about his priorities for the UN General Assembly.
I want really, above all, Alexandra, to bring the voices of the victims of humanitarian crises around the world to the world leaders. When I was in Niger and Nigeria last week, I sat under trees and awnings with refugees and displaced people whose lives have really been disrupted and ruined by some of these crises. And I wanted to bring their story and their voice to the leaders. You know, on lots of the crises we're dealing with, there has been some progress. The humanitarian system is reaching tens of millions of people every year, and we're saving millions of lives. But we need to do an even better job on protection and water and sanitation and health and education and all those things if we're going to listen effectively to those people's voices.
You just mentioned the Lake Chad region, and your recent trip there. What message are you bringing back from what you heard, you know, more in depth here into the GA halls?
Well, I mean, the first message is the humanitarian response has made a difference. I've spent a lot of the last 30 years trying to deal with and respond to famines around the world. And at the end of last year, I thought there was a really significant chance that there could be four famines in the world this year. There's only been one in the last 20 years, and one of them was in the Lake Chad Basin region. Now, because of the scale-up of assistance, millions of people being reached with food and cash and education and health, that's been averted so far. But there is still a big, big problem. And the biggest message I heard from the people I listened to, who are the victims of this crisis, were that they needed better protection. They fear for their safety and security, and they want the international community to help more with that.
You know, more crises are becoming protracted, unfortunately. How do you think that the humanitarian and development communities can better cooperate to move beyond cyclical crisis response towards sustainable solutions?
That's what we need to be about. I've spent my career working on these problems and trying to get them to solutions so that they don't recur. And the good news is lots of countries in which we used to have to deal all the time with repeated crises, we don't have to do that anymore. My very first job was dealing with the famine in Ethiopia in 1985-86. Ethiopia has developed enormously. Now there is a safety net system so that when drought strikes, as it has done again this year, the impact, the human impact, is much less than it used to be. And there's no reason at all why we can't help other countries make that same journey.
Torture, rape and arbitrary detention in Burundi may amount to crimes against humanity, UN-appointed experts told the Human Rights Council on Tuesday. Violence erupted in Burundi after President Pierre Nkurunziza won a controversial third term in office in 2015. Fatsa Uagarguz, head of the UN Commission of Inquiry tasked with investigating the situation, explained the panel's findings to Daniel Johnson.
We picked up a certain type of serious violation of human rights, which are conducted in the framework of generalized attack or systematized attack against the population, the civil population. Among those serious violations, we have identified a certain of numbers of them which might constitute crimes against humanity. I said might constitute because we are working on the level of proof, which is a little bit lower than the one of a judicial body. Among those crimes, I would mention torture, murder, rape and sexual violence.
I know it's impossible to quantify the numbers because you haven't got access, for one thing, to the country,
yes.
But you have had access to more than 500 testimonies.
Yes.
And you say that arbitrary detentions, possibly in their thousands,
yes.
Cases of torture in their hundreds, cases of rape, dozens, but that's really just scratching the surface.
Yes, exactly. And you just mentioned the basis on which we have reached our conclusions, about 500 testimonies. So our inquiry is not totally exhaustive given the time which was given to us and the means as well as resources, human resources. So on the basis of those 500, we have given these pure estimations. Very difficult to give precise numbers in dozens.
And I guess people might say, well, if you haven't got access to the country, what is the point of this particular report? You were set up a year ago by the Human Rights Council. How are you going to apply pressure to make sure that those who are responsible are brought to justice? Because you say there is raging impunity within the country.
It's not up to the Commission to raise pressure against the government of Burundi. Our mandate consists essentially in a mapping of the situation of human rights and examine the scale of the violations and determine some crimes against humanity as well as identify the author of those violations. We did our job. So now it's up to the Human Rights Council and other stakeholders to take decision and to make pressure.
You mean the ICC, the International Criminal Court, as well as the African Union, you're calling on them as well to get involved?
Exactly.
Tell us about the ICC.
But the ICC is not a political body. The ICC is also limited in its action. The ICC can only prosecute and judge, and then it's up to the state to cooperate with the ICC in the conduct of the activity of the ICC and as well as after the ICC has reached a final decision. So the ICC so far has opened a preliminary examination on the 25th April of 2016. And now it remains to be seen if the court will open an investigation as such in order to ascertain the possibility, again, working on the same basis, on the same burden of proof, reasonable grounds to believe that crimes against humanity have been conducted.
A teacher and school founder who helped win the release of some of the Chibok girls from Boko Haram extremists in Nigeria has been declared the winner of this year's Nansern Award, sponsored by the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR. Mustafa Zana has opened schools in the conflict zone of northeast Nigeria, where the Boko Haram group first began its terror campaign. He provides free education to child victims of violence. The Norwegian Refugee Council Secretary General Jan Egeland said that Mustafa's brave work highlighted the importance of education for the future of Nigeria.
Our capacity is highly limited without active collaboration with international development partners. So we felt this award came at the right time by collaborating with them, with the UNHCR, the Norwegian Refugee Council, and other assemblies of goodwill from the international community so that we should partner to see that we relieved what is the current situation in the state.
We understand you have been involved in helping to free the Chibok girls from Boko Haram. Could you tell us about that?
When I'm a trained mediator, and when it happens that the government, President Muhammad Buhari, when he came to the level of the United Nations to say, I want to negotiate with Boko Haram. So from there, that was when we got the mandate to see that we mediate on these projects, because the activities of the Boko Harams have been outlawed from the UN level to down to Nigeria. But with such a mandate at the level of the United Nations coming down from the president, then we got an opening, or we call it the entry point, for us to start mediation on the process.
Regarding the Chibok girls, what was the most emotional moment?
When I received about 82 of them at the same time. I think that is the highest point I ever had in my life, saying I have saved 82 lives.
How can education help in preventing conflict-related and gender-based violence?
So education has always been one of the lower-level approach to conflict resolution. If you peel it with good substance, so be it, and they will grow as good. Nobody has the tendency of violence in him. It is the process that makes him to know. And we take them as children, not minding where they hail from or how they come.
Is there anything further you think audience should know?
There are children who are at the age bracket of 3 to 5 who do not even know their second name, talk less of knowing their parents, or talk less of knowing their ascendancy, where they hail from, how they are born. They don't know their religion. They don't know even their birth parents. These are children born to the IDP's camp. So we need to take these children off and give them positive moral value of the society.
Mustafa Zana spoke to Agnesi Pastorino following the announcement of the award. You've been listening to UN and Africa, and you can follow more of our programmes at radio.un.org, and we're also on Facebook. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Matt Wells.